everybody. This is Adam Triunfo.
And this is Chris Plus Plus. Thank you for joining us for our first actual episode.
Today we're going to be talking about just a couple of games. We're going to start off with two of the games that are built into the Astrocade. Gunfight and...
Checkmate, which I thought was a chess program.
You know, the Astrocade actually doesn't even have a chess program.
Well, why put the player to sleep? They want it to be exciting, right? Do you ever play chess? I used to play chess in elementary school before video games.
Yeah, I used to play it when my son was growing up.
Oh, cool.
He used to play it in kindergarten, and yeah, we had a good time. So we just played a couple of rounds of Gunfight. Gunfight is about a 2K game, and it's built into the Astrocade. It's in its AK ROM. It's the biggest game that's located in its ROM. The other two games in the system are Checkmate and Scribbling. I guess Scribbling isn't really a game at all, is it?
Yeah, it's a diversion.
Yeah, and the other program is Calculator. We're going to be avoiding that one right now.
Calculator Marathon! Woo! I enjoyed playing Gunfight just now. I can understand why this is one of the built-in games on the console, because it's getting the player used to using the joystick itself and the analog controls at the same time.
So Gunfight is actually based on a 1975 coin-op game, which was black and white only. And this is a color version of it. Similar game. I haven't ever played the coin-op before except in MAME and only in passing, because I had no accurate way to control it.
There was a Japanese arcade game from, I believe, 1975 called Western Gun. And Midway licensed this game. Tom McHugh, who was a coder at Dave Nutting Associates here in America, he basically programmed the game for a microprocessor. And so Gunfight is one of the first microprocessor-driven arcade video games. It's probably not the very first, but I get that from actually an interesting website. You guys ought to go to All In Color for a Quarter, period, blogspot, period, com. allincolorforaquarter.blogspot.com, okay? There's some arcade history there that will blow your mind. I don't know where this guy gets his research material, unless he's making it up. I don't think so, though. But he talks about, as a matter of fact, his current article, and I say that because it's been on there for about 4 months. He doesn't update it a great deal. Talks about what the actual first microprocessor-based arcade video game is. But Gunfight is...
I always thought Gunfight was.
I did for years, of course, until I read that. But Gunfight's one of the earliest, and I guess it was, what, 75, 76?
75, yeah.
Okay. So that was a Nutting / Midway game called Gunfight, and it was a brilliant game to include among the built-in programs on the Astrocade, because, as I was saying, it got the player used to, you know, using the digital and analog controls at the same time.
And if Nutting programmed it, then it makes sense that it would be built into the Astrocade also, because Nutting programmed all those games for the Astrocade.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Awesome. All right, thank you for joining us.
So when you do start up the game, you get a choice to have up to 99. You have to, the first person to reach 99 points. And in some Astrocades, you can choose up to 9,999. And if any of you have played a game that long, please contact us and we'll tell you to go get a life. So you can choose how long you want to play basically by how many points you have to score. And then you just shoot at each other. The knob controls the where you fire the gun, and you can move at the same time. So you can move in 8 directions, and you can fire in an opposite direction from your moving. So,
right, you have separate controls for your gun. Those always face right out in front of you. So I guess that would be 6 different angles. And the top and bottom screen borders deflect your ball. And so your bullet. So this is not Breakout. So you can hit your adversary with bank shots. The trees or whatever closest to your opponent, he can just shoot right through them. They don't stop his bullets. The ones closest to you, he has to shoot out bit by bit before he can finally get through them and hit you. Now, there are gaps between them, so you can aim between the trees or whatever. But, you know, I'd say not pixel by pixel, I guess section by section from the top down, you can blast the trees, you know, closest to your opponent. They'll just, your bullets will go right through the ones closest to you. And eventually, I don't know, after how many points did that stagecoach show up?
It was probably after 5 or 6 points, okay. Something like that.
And that you can't diminish at all. Your bullets don't take pieces out of it like they do to your opponent's vegetation. It just blocks your shots.
And it moves from the bottom of the screen to the top of the screen. Mm-hmm. And then it just starts over.
Starts over, right. Pretty damn good graphics. When you shoot your enemy, it looks like he deflates like a balloon.
Yeah, it kind of does. I guess he's supposed to be falling into a grave, I think. Oh. I think that's what it looks like to me. I mean,
he doesn't care.
He doesn't. And he says, got me. Well, he doesn't say got me, but got me appears on the screen.
Yeah, it reads,
got me.
This way, in case you were wondering why he fell down.
Right. Lack of water. This is not Oregon Trail.
When you begin the game, you each have 6 bullets. You can run out of bullets, and if your opponent still has bullets, he can fire at you, and vice versa.
But once you run out of bullets, a timer starts. I think it starts counting down from 10. So your opponent has that long before your bullets are replenished.
Both players, for both players.
Oh, okay, so it fills them both up with 6? Okay.
Yes. Checkmate is the next game we're going to be covering. It's a 1-4 player game. Actually, it's also a 0 player game. If you put in 0 players, the 4 computer players will play against themselves, which is kind of neat. And they play at a panic speed. They play very, very quickly, much faster than the game ever gets that I've seen when humans are playing the game. So Chris was saying earlier that he thinks the first checkmate type game was called Blockade. Is that right?
Blockade is a game by Gremlin before Sega bought and swallowed Gremlin. Because, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, for a while there, a lot of games were known as Sega/Gremlin. Well, Gremlin was its own company at first. And Blockade, as far as I know, was the first surround light cycles. Gremlin itself then came out with a follow-up called Hustle that had, it was the same thing, but it had squares on the screen that would appear randomly with point values inside. And all you had to do was run into them to get the points. Atari ripped them off with Dominoes, same thing as Blockade. And I guess one of these, you said, was a Midway arcade game called Checkmate.
Okay. Yeah, a black and white game.
Hmm. Did it have overlays?
I don't know.
Okay.
I've never played any of these old arcade games. I don't really have memories of the arcade games from the 70s really at all. Mm-hmm. My first experience with arcades was in the 80s. I guess I saw some arcade games. One of my very first memories of any arcade game, maybe my first memory is actually of Seawolf 2, which is a game that uses the SK chipset. But that was at like a hotel or something that we were staying at in maybe 79, 1980, something like that.
Oh, wow, that early.
Yeah, I was short enough that I think I had to stand on a stool in order to look in the periscope.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a cool cabinet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't play any arcade games until 80 or 81 myself when I was 8 or 9.
You know,
so I don't remember any of the TTL games.
Transistor Logic.
The pre-microprocessor games.
A video game was a video game to me. I didn't, you know, if I had seen, Space Race? It's the...
Space Race, like the Frogger-ish?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
That was a TTL game, I think. But I wouldn't have known the difference.
It had to have been. But yeah, you're right. I wouldn't have known the difference. And black and white didn't matter. I mean, Asteroids Deluxe, these were monochrome games.
That is true.
And the Omega Race, speaking of Midway, it suited them. I think it looks cool. It's this minimalistic thing, you know?
Well, and also, it was very handy that there were so many space games because space is black. And
true.
You know, what if space was blue? What would they have done back in the 70s? We would have had to wait until the 80s until they got color before we had video games.
It was just monitors automatically would have come with blue overlays. That's all.
The original release of the manual is called the Bally Home Library Computer Owner's Manual. Checkmate. 0-4 players. Challenge your friends or family to this fascinating game of wits. See if you can cause your opponents to crash into your trail, their trail, or the size of the TV screen before they nail you. How to get checkmate on your screen, so it explains how to do that. 0 for no players. Oh, I didn't realize it said that in the manual. So yeah, there's really nothing scoring. Okay. Every time you outlast one of your opponents, you receive 1 point. For example, in a game with 4 players, the first player to be eliminated scores 0, and the remaining 3 score 1 point each. The next player eliminated also scores 0, and the remaining 2 players each score another point. After all other players have been eliminated, the remaining player will have scored 3 points, and the game is over.
There will be a quiz later in the episode.
It says the game is over, but that just means that round is over. The game actually can continue for as many rounds as you play.
Up to 99 in this one?
Yeah, up to 99, okay.
And these built-in games, you know, we're talking about the games, half of the 4 built-in programs were programmed by possibly Bob Ogden of Wizard of War Infamy, spelled with an O somehow, and possibly Jay Fenton, he of Gorf and something else that I'm forgetting. Anyway, you must know something about calculator and scribbling. Like, why did they include those? Like, scribbling is just a video graffiti program, like Surround, except the dots are much smaller.
And I'm guessing they included them because they were easy to program. And a calculator is probably something you could sell for parents for educational. And I have asked on the ballot discussion boards if anyone used it back when they were growing up. And people have. I was surprised, yeah.
Well, that's
Lance,
cool.
Squire said he did some of his homework on it or something like that. So,
oh, wow.
And I guess it was used.
First of all, so there's no confusion about which, let's just say vehicle. Let's analogize it to the light cycles. Adam and I just played against two computer light cycles, light squares. And so it'll say 1, 2, 3, 4, all around the center. So you know who you are and who your human opponent is, if you care, because that's the one you really got to watch out for. The computers, thankfully, is pretty dumb. But not as dumb as I had expected. I got trapped a couple times.
They play okay. Yeah.
The more people die, as it were, the more it speeds up. And so when you're down to just two vehicles, whether it's you and your buddy or the two computer players or whatever, it's at its fastest. And it's fun. You usually find yourself boxing yourself in and just hoping that you have a large enough area to last in so your opponent kills himself. There are two different colors, red and green, and two different patterns. There's a trail of what look like Chinese stars, and then there's just simple squares, but they alternate. So there's a red squares, red stars, green squares, green stars. So it's easy for you to keep track of who you are.
If you decide, we were saying earlier that you could have a zero-player game. Well, if you decide you're going to have a four-player game or a three-player game or however many players are going to be in it, if no one moves their controller, the computer automatically takes over. And what's neat about that is on the next round, you can take the control back. You could have someone step away for a few minutes because they had to go do something, and you would still have four people playing, perhaps. You know what I mean? So that's a pretty neat gimmick.
It was cool. It seemed to take over if you hit a barrier. Instead of just letting you die, some guy inside the Astro K goes, oh, he's not playing anymore, and takes over and turns just in time. And that's when the computer takes over your vehicle or your square or whatever you would like to call it.
Maybe they're called checkmates.
Checkmates, yeah.
So a few months ago, around March or so, Albert on Atari Age, he set up a subforum for me at my request. And thank you, Albert. I appreciate that. It's a subforum for the Astrocade. So now we all have a place to communicate besides just the Bally Alley discussion group that's available on Yahoo, which is not difficult to use, but it's kind of a pain to use. And it doesn't let you easily, it doesn't let you put pictures at all unless you put them as attachments. I presume most of you are familiar with the Atari Age forums, even if you're not an Atari Age user, just about everyone meets there. The Astrocade now has a high score club. If you're interested in playing competitively for fun, there's no prizes, there's nothing like that. We don't take this too seriously. You don't have to take a video of your entire game.
There's no prizes. I found a mistake.
You and your Marvel friends. So the Astrocade high score club so far, I think we're in round six. Each round lasts about 2 weeks. So far, the way it's been working, and it seems to work pretty well, is we have a main game, which is a cartridge game. And we have a bonus game, which is a basic game, because we haven't really talked about it too much, but there's hundreds of basic games, and not all of them are thrilling, but some of them are pretty interesting, and some of them are quite fun. And I figure, what better way than have people get a chance to play them than to have them in a high score club? The first round, we played a Astro Battle, which is Space Invaders. In fact, it was also called Space Invaders, and it got renamed Astro Battle. The second round, we played Space Fortress, which was in the arcade, was called Space Zap. The third round, we played an Astrocade-only game called Cosmic Raiders, which some people think is like Defender, but is nothing like Defender. It looks similar to it.
It scrolls, but you're not rescuing anybody.
That's correct. You're trying to stop bombs or missiles. I guess they're bombs from falling onto a planet.
And Cosmic Raiders is only on this console. Fun game.
It is a great game. So the fourth game we covered was The Incredible Wizard, which is a port of Wizard of War. Why did they change the name? I don't know. We're going to figure that out sometime.
Initially, of course, these games are the property of Midway, the arcade company. Bally came out with the Bally Professional Arcade, or whatever you'd like to call it, depending on the month. Mm-hmm. Astrovision, which very shortly thereafter changed its name to Astrocade, purchased the console and the rights to release games for the console from Bally in 81. A lot of cartridge games came out at this time. They were released by Astrocade rather than having been released by Bally.
So, well, Astrocade also did re-release games.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, almost all of them. I don't think all of them, though.
I'm assuming that for some reason, Bally did not allow Astrocade Incorporated to use the arcade game names, but said, go ahead, keep the programs. You can release them on cartridges and all of that, but you got to change the names.
You know what this is kind of bringing up, which I think should be mentioned, because most people don't think of the Astrocade as having a lot of arcade ports, but it does. They're just old arcade ports from the 70s, most of them. And so people don't really think of it as a game that had arcade games on it, when when the majority of the earliest games were arcade games. In fact, the built-in games were arcade ports.
Yeah, Gunfight was renamed from Gunfight. Checkmate was renamed from Checkmate. And Calculator was renamed from Basic Math / Fun with Numbers.
The fifth game in the High Score Club was Clown's Brickyard. And unfortunately, I picked a dud for the basic bonus game. The basic bonus game that round was called Brick in the Wall by Wavemakers. And this was one of the four famous freebies. And it's completely written in BASIC. And what's interesting was there's not really any documentation for it available. But I do have the original submission letter that was sent with the tape to Bob Fabris and the printout as well. And he had the game working a little better, but much slower. And the game is slow. Someone in the thread for the High Score Club compared this basic version of Breakout to playing chess, because that's how slow the ball moves around. And it's almost accurate. You really do get to contemplate where you want to be. And I got the high score because I just said, well, I can just keep playing him because I'm never going to ever miss the ball. And I think everyone else just said, I'm not playing this anymore. And I said, well, I want to get the highest score. So, and I eventually just gave up. But it's still an interesting game to see. And it's only, I think it was 20 lines of code. So it was very short. The fact that they were able to do that was pretty impressive.
Why were they freebies? Did this cassette full of four games come with something else you might order from Wavemakers?
Yeah, so what would happen would be you'd get a tape. Obviously, a tape has two sides. Usually what would happen, there'd be kind of an A side, which is the game you wanted, and a B side, which was another game. And it wasn't always as good. It wasn't the A title, you know?
It was Breaking the Wall Part 2.
So sometimes you'd throw on these free games. The interesting thing about it, though, is since it's a tape, he could actually put more than one program per side, which is probably what he did, too. I can't remember exactly how it was distributed that way.
So all four came on side B sometimes, or did they mix and match?
It was always all four of them.
It was always all four. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
The thing about the Wavemakers games, they're really good, but they don't use any machine code. I don't think any of them do. And so they have a lot of blinking and stuff like that, which is very typical on the Astrocade for the basic games. It wasn't until about 81 or so when they started using subroutines from the AK ROM that was built into the Astrocade.
And that did make waves.
Round six of the High Score Club, the main game was Maze Man. And that's kind of a Pac-Man game. It's got four monsters on the screen. It's
kind of.
Kind of, yeah. It is a Pac-Man game. It's got 12 mazes, so it's got Ms. Pac-Man beat, I guess. And also the game has no sound, which is interesting. The basic bonus game for that round was Candyman, which is uses a lot of machine language subroutines that are built into the AK ROM. Otherwise, it couldn't have achieved the speed that it did.
The console's AK ROM, not the cartridges.
So that is, I've mentioned basic carts a few times. I should probably give a better explanation of what those are at some point. But what they essentially are is most of them have basic built on. So that's 4K basic is in there and 4K of the ROM. So it's an 8K ROM. It holds the data that was on the tape. And doing some magic, some of the programmers back in the 80s figured out a way to get it to work from a ROM cartridge. The current round, the game is Bally Pin, also known as Astrocade Pinball, when it was re-released by Astrocade. Although there is, I found just yesterday when I was posting what the new game would be, there originally Bally Pin was what Astrocade released it as. And the Bally basic bonus game for round seven that's to be played with Bally Pin is called Avalanche by Steve Walters, and it is based on Pachinko, and we don't know how to play it exactly. We're not sure if we're supposed to score the lowest, score the highest. We're not sure exactly what's going on in the game because we don't have instructions. What we have is like a sentence or two that I found that were from an ad that was basically trying to get you to buy the game, but it doesn't explain how to play the game. It just says, and if you're not careful, there will be an avalanche. So another host that will probably be joining us eventually is going to be Paul Thacker. He sent us a submission that we're going to include right here.
Hi, I'm Paul Thacker. I hadn't yet been born when the Astrocade came out, so I can't tell you any fun stories about growing up with the system. My first serious video game experience was with the NES, and I've kept up with video games since then. When I was in grad school, I lived in a house with a few friends, and a couple of them decided to build a MAME cabinet for emulating arcade games. Everyone had fun with that, of course, and I even got pretty good at Donkey Kong. Soon we all started adding various home consoles and portables into the mix. Of course, we began with the obvious choices like the Atari 2600, Game Boy, and Genesis, which I was already at least somewhat familiar with. But I also started playing around with more obscure systems. Many systems had their high points. I even had fun for a little while with two-player Dodgit on the Channel F. But generally, I viewed these games more as historical curiosities than truly great. The Astrocade, however, stood out as having quality software, despite the fact that I'd never heard of it before looking up comprehensive lists of video game consoles. Games like The Incredible Wizard were good enough to keep coming back to, so I was interested enough to look into the Astrocade's history. I found the Bally Alley website, which even a decade ago had a wealth of both basic information and original documents like scans of the Arcadian newsletter. I also joined the associated Yahoo group, which had some very knowledgeable and enthusiastic members. One unique aspect of the system is that, despite never achieving immense popularity, from the beginning it had a very dedicated base of users. They started newsletters, user groups, and even small companies producing hardware add-ons and original software. Most of the software was made possible by one of the basic cartridges released for the Astrocade. The basic programs could be saved on cassette tapes that could be played on a regular tape player and connected to the system by an audio cable. This had its disadvantages, but it was much cheaper than a disk drive. So basic software proliferated, sometimes printed in newsletters, sometimes sold on tapes. While having fun with all these emulators, I also read enough to realize how much work went into making this possible. It wasn't big organizations preserving vintage software, just hobbyists who cared about keeping it around. Without their work, some of these games wouldn't simply be hard to access. In many cases, they might disappear altogether. And this was particularly true of something like Astrocade tape software. Cassettes degrade with time, many of these tapes were only released in small quantities, and there was hardly an army of people working on them. Bally Alley had some programs digitized, but it was a small fraction of what had been produced. So, take all this together, and I decided to take the plunge and buy a system and some tapes online. I didn't completely know what I was doing at first, but I figured out how to digitize some tapes, and gradually got better at doing it. At the same time, I started getting access to a lot more tapes. Adam sent me some tapes from Mike White, and collectors loaned out their collections. I started working with Adam and others to better preserve all aspects of the Astrocade's history. We scanned documents and interviewed programmers. Adam and I bought a huge collection of tapes and documents that came from Arcadian editor Bob Fabris. I dumped rare cartridge prototypes, and Adam kept adding these digital artifacts to Bally Alley. I look at the website now, and there's not just a smattering of tape programs, but a reasonably comprehensive collection. We've learned obscure details about the system's history, so we no longer have to simply speculate about why the console had so many different names. And I've had a lot of fun and made some friends along the way. And now there's a podcast, too. It should be a good format for interviewing important people from the system's history, and hopefully we can interest some listeners who want to learn about a fascinating system. So, welcome to the Bally Alley Astrocast.
In episode zero, we were talking about some of the people that we would like to interview, and one of the people I'd mentioned was Tony Miller, who did some work on the Astrocade, or excuse me, the Bally Arcade back in the 1976, 77 era. And he was a member of the Yahoo groups in the early days in about 2001. And so I was looking him up, seeing if I could find him. And it turned out he'd passed away. So I wrote a message to the Bally Alley Yahoo group, which I posted on October 28th, 2016. I'm going to read it here. 2015. In the early days of the Bally Alley Yahoo discussion group, there was a frequent contributor named Tony Miller. He helped to design the Bally Arcade computer expansion that went unreleased in 1978. I thought it would be a good idea to interview him for an upcoming episode of the Astrocade podcast. I looked him up on the internet, and I didn't have any trouble finding him. His website will be in our show notes. His website is dedicated to jukeboxes, but under his list of accomplishments, Tony says that he helped create the unreleased computer add-on for the Bally Arcade. This accomplishment fits our Tony Miller perfectly. Sadly, shortly afterward, I found a post by someone named Ken Layton in a jukebox collecting forum that gave unexpected news. He said, "It is with great sadness to report that Seberg jukebox expert Tony Miller passed away suddenly on Monday, April 6, 2009. You can see his original post in our links. I privately asked several members of this Bally Alley Yahoo discussion group if they had heard anything about this before. Paul Thacker investigated past messages posted to the Yahoo group messages and discovered that the last post that Tony left was on March 15th, 2009. This is about 3 weeks before the forum post says that Tony Miller died. In the early days of this discussion group, in about 2001, there was talk of just how easy it might be to upgrade the Astrocade to high-res mode. Tony Miller insisted that it wasn't as easy as people expected, yet still the rumor persisted, and in some ways, it still does to this day. In 2001, Tony seemed to have reached a personal boiling point about this supposed easy-to-make high-res mode unit that people dreamed about creating. Tony used his creative energy to write a 25-page description of the Bally Professional Arcade video hardware and associated coin-op hardware. This description proved to Tony's satisfaction that the commercial, that is, the high-res mode of the Astrocade, was not possible with a simple RAM upgrade. Tony's discussion of the video hardware can be read online, too, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. Although I didn't know Tony personally, we never spoke. I wish I had. It was Tony's dedication to details in the Bally community and, from what I can see, also in the jukebox collecting community that brought me a particularly heavy sadness when I discovered that he had died. My heartfelt, though late, condolences go out to his family.
Now, the theme music you keep hearing at the beginning of these episodes was composed and performed by one Dominic Lohar, who happens to be Adam's son. And since I'm supposed to know something about music, Adam handed me a brief description that Dominic had sent him about how he came up with the Astrocast theme music. And oddly enough, it's titled How the Astrocast Theme Was Written. Dominic writes, "I started just by looking through your emails for a sound effect that I thought would work well." By the way, Dominic is currently attending university, and he's, I think the official name of his major is Music Badass.
Music education.
I liked the, quote, new Candyman sound effect from Candyman. So I used that. I listened to the sound effect a few times and tried to play something along with it on my flute that fit to me. After getting the first couple of measures and feeling satisfied with them, I wrote them down in Finale using my piano. After that, I wrote the rest just on flute, writing it down as I went along. Once that was finished, I added chords on piano and found a rhythm for it that I thought fit nicely. And once those were in place, the bass almost wrote itself. And I learned how to write basic bass parts in my jazz pedagogy class. That sounds obscene. And it really helped out. At this point, I saved the Finale as a MIDI file and opened it in FL Studio. Not sure what that is, but I trust him. I deleted the flute part, since I was going to record live, and opened up my favorite piano VST for the piano. Hey, he's taking music, not English, folks. I ended up using what I think is a nice warm piano sound. For the bass, I took a sound font, which is a sample, an instrument sample, that comes with FL Studio, and changed it both on the synthesizer itself and by running it through an equalizer. Once I could loop that, I took takes on my flute until I got one that sounded right to me. I had already contacted Brandon, and more on him later. Sunday afternoon, I sent it off to him to add drums. I gave him a few instructions on how to start and end the piece, but I left everything else up to him. He finished it just about an hour ago. Now, this isn't live.
This was actually back in September of 2015. That shows how long we've contemplated creating this podcast.
Oh, we thought about it a long time. I took his drums, ran them through an EQ in FL Studio so they'd blend a little nicer, and called it done. Dominic Lohar, Esquire. So, anyway, I like the tune. Good, well, I guess it's not a song. Good piece of music, Dominic.
So, one of the segments we've talked about that we wanted to do...
I'm going
to
start making fun of you every time you start a sentence with so. At least you don't use upspeak.
Okay.
Actually, no, what am I saying? You talk how you want. I'm always going off on people telling each other how to talk and how political correctness is a synonym for censorship. Yeah, you talk how you want. Just know, kids, upspeak and starting sentences with so, it lacks conviction. But hey, you do what you want.
For this first show, I'm only going to cover a couple issues of the Arcadian, or not even the Arcadian, but rather what came before the Arcadian called the Arcadians. There were 5 issues of that. It was released by Bob Fabris. It was a round robin type newsletter. Basically a couple sheets of paper that get passed. People didn't pay for it, except for some people sent stamps to them. And it's kind of like a Christmas newsletter or a Christmas letter, you know, they send out with your Christmas cards every year. Everyone gets the exact same letter. That's what a round robin letter is. They're very, very brief. They're not proper newsletters at all, but that's what led to the Arcadian. And one of the things I'll be talking about and referring to, which I need to clear up, is originally Bally made a deal with a mail order company called JS&A, and they were going to be the people that distributed the Bally Arcade. And because of the overheating problems and all of these other issues that came up and the how Bally was shipping them late, JS&A cut off ties with them eventually. And so Bally went their own way. And
about when did that happen? Was this still 78?
Yeah, it was probably springish, spring, summer of 78, something like that. Bob Fabris was the publisher of the Arcadian newsletter from 1978 to 1986. In the absence of Bally professional arcade coverage in most magazines, the Arcadian was one of the few ways in which most users were able to communicate with each other. In early 2001, I asked Bob, in an email, to write an introduction for the Astrocade CD compilation that I was creating. This CD compilation was inspired by the Digital Press 2 CD set released in about 1998 or something like that. The Astrocade CD was never created, instead that turned into BallyAlley.com, thankfully. Here is an excerpt from An Introduction to the BPA, which is the Bally Professional Arcade, by Bob Fabris. On receipt of my unit, which he got in 1978, I could see that the new social concept of a user group where people could learn from each other would apply nicely to the Bally Professional Arcade. To start with, I placed an ad in Online, a computer-oriented sell-and-swap paper in March. I then wrote a sort of round-robin newsletter for 5 months, with the content being almost entirely from contributors, readers, provided news and rumors, and some experimenters opened the box and reported their discoveries. For instance, they found the 50-pin expansion connector, the light pin socket, and other goodies. So that's what Bob had to say about the very beginning of the newsletter. He goes into quite a bit of detail about how it was set up in his introduction to the BPA. That can actually be read online at BallyAlley.com. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. After these 5 short issues of Arcadians were sent to a few people, the Arcadian was published for the very first time with the November 6th, 1978 issue. Most issues of this monthly newsletter are about 10 pages each. Some of them are about 20, but those are 2 issues put together, and they were usually like, I think, the November and December issues. The Arcadian continued to be published until August 15th, 1986. There were 864 pages of the Arcadian newsletter published by the time it came to an end. The newsletter published 329 programs, nearly all of them written in Bally Basic or Astro Basic, and only using 1.8K of RAM accessible to Basic. Most of these programs were games. They started off rather rough, but as users of the newsletters began to uncover how the Bally Arcade and Basic worked, they shared that information with each other. Although nearly all published programs only used Basic's ability to access the 1.8K of RAM, over time, the games became much more sophisticated. In this episode, I'm going to cover the first 2 issues of the Arcadians. I'm just going to sum them up briefly. I kind of went through them and highlighted the interesting parts. The first Arcadians is very short. It's 2 pages, and the second one is even shorter. It's only 1 page, and just the front of that page. So Arcadians, number 1, was published April 12, 1978. It begins, Bally owners, thanks for your response to my ad. All the letters I've received have indicated interest in the Bally, some from non-owners. What is it? The first package is just a TV player. By that he's talking about it's a game console. I find it interesting he calls it a TV player. Internal to the machine is a 3-game package and a 4-function calculator. There is a lot of potential, but it is locked up inside. A color TV is a must because you miss so much otherwise. The initial cost of the package with 4 controllers was $299. Currently, it is being sold for $220 plus $30 for a pair of extra controllers. I find that pretty interesting because it's only April and the machine wasn't shipped until January and the price had already dropped $50. Or actually, it already dropped $80. Bob goes on to say, some game cartridges, cassettes, whatever, they have no tape in them, are available now between $20 and $25, and each has 2 to 4 games on it. What Bob's referring to here when he says cassettes, whatever, is that in the documentation for the Bally units, the cartridges aren't called cartridges at all. They're called cassettes. They are also referred to as videocades. What's next? The first item coming is a stopgap, a tiny basic cartridge that slips into the game slot at $50. Along with this is an overlay card to convert the calculator keyboard. He goes on and explains how that's going to work. When Bob refers to Tiny Basic, he is referring to Bally Basic, what later became called Astro Basic. After Tiny Basic comes the biggie, the add-on module. This will be a keyboard with full basic, cassette drive, and extra memory. This item obviously didn't ship. It was promised as the add-under for years. Even Astrocade were going to release it, apparently. Bob continues, those who bought from JSNA prior to February 28th are also supposed to receive an extra goodie when they buy the add-on module. And this goodie will cost nothing. This is called Dial-A-Bargain. It is basically a telephone modem and special cartridge. Its purpose is to allow computer-to-computer dialogue with the JSNA machine in Illinois. This also was never released. In addition, another cartridge is to be supplied free that gives a self-diagnosis capability identifying defective internal components. This wasn't technically released as a product from JSNA or Bally, but a man named Richard Belton did sell this. This was called Balcheck. Bob goes on to describe himself. He is interested in ham radio and he's a registered CB owner. One of his electronic pastimes is restoring classic radios. So after he describes himself, he says, what about this group? We are all interested in knowing what we can accomplish with the Bally. It seems to have an awful lot of potential. And Chris did bring this up in the last episode, episode 0, that there's so much untapped potential of the Astrocade that we still haven't seen today. We need to know the identity of each of the 50-pin connector leads, how the 3-pin connector works. He wondered, was it for the cassette interface? And it was. We start off feeling around. As any of us discover something, it should be shipped here for dissemination to the group. I would like to have Bally cooperation, which he does get. I plan, he says, on a little wider publicity via the hobby magazines. Killabod plans an article reviewing the Bally. That sums up the first issue of Arcadians. The next issue came out about 6 weeks later, May 29th, 1978. He says, to Bally owners, Arcadians, this is letter number 2 to correspondence to my online advertisement. Some of you have been waiting quite a while for your unit. A call to JSNA on Friday, May 19th, revealed that they still have problems. Rumor has it that there has been a redesign necessary to alleviate an overheating problem with the first batch. Possibly the metal shielding over the PC board contains the heat too much, and there have been failures. The new design will be able to dissipate the heat. Well, as we know, the Bally never really got a fix for this. Astrocade did come up with an arrangement that worked out okay, where they actually used the heat shield, or excuse me, they used the shielding as a heat sink. However, it's not a perfect design, and as any of you out there who have a broken Astrocade can attest to, it's still a problem to this day. JSNA also indicated that they had math and baseball games in stock right now. Bob compares these to the Fairchild Channel F version of baseball, but I'm not sure if I can agree with that, although it has been quite a while since I've seen that version. JSNA indicated that delivery for Tiny Basic is now in July. Does this mean that the add-on is similarly delayed? Bob wondered. Well, the add-on was never delivered, but Tiny Basic was delivered, although I'm not exactly sure if July was when it was first out the door, because the first issue of the Arcadians, or excuse me, of the Arcadian started in November, and that was pretty much as soon as Bob was able to get an issue off the ground after he got basic. So it seems maybe the early fall maybe was when Bally Basic was finally shipped. The one last thing in here that's notable is that Bob would especially like the Tiny Basic Get Here, so we'll all have a chance to do something real with the unit. All that potential there and not being able to get at it is quite frustrating. So that sums up the first two issues. In the next Astrocast, I'll cover up maybe the last three issues of the Arcadians, and then we'll start covering the Arcadian newsletter in the next episode after that.
All right, before we go, we spoke last time about Adam's awesome website, ballyalley.com, and we figured we'd go over some recent updates, just going back to the beginning of February, and no, this isn't going to be dull. We just want to let you know what awesome reading material is available. As of February 2nd, Adam added a review of Bally Pin, which, you know, he spoke with you about earlier in the episode. Some of you, like me, might finally remember Electronic Games, the first magazine that was ever strictly dedicated to video games. And so this review of Bally Pin was actually written by Arnie Katz and Bill Kunkel, the two founders of Electronic Games, in a column called Programmable Parade. And on February 4th, Adam added an article called Zgrass Opens New Vistas for Computer Artists. And David Needle wrote this. It was published in a magazine called InfoWorld. Who remembers that one? And that's from April of 82. On the 5th of February, he added, Programmables, show business is in cartridges. That comes from Consumer Electronics, May of 79. So you see how Adam is ferreting out all of these articles about the Astrocade and getting them all together in one place. You're not going to find this stuff anywhere else online. On the 9th of February, he updated the Arcadian articles compilation. We'll talk about the Arcadian more next time. Couple more were added on February 11th. The latest in home video games. This was written by Robert L. Perry. Do you remember Boy's Life? My dad got me a subscription to that, and all I would do was flip to the cartoons.
Yeah, I used to read the cartoons in Boy's Life as well.
And the rest of it, I was like, I don't care how many trout you caught. And here's one for you people who know nothing about the technical side of electronic entertainment. It's called, dig this, Language Control Structures for Easy Electronic Visualization, by Tom DeFonti.
That's actually a really interesting article. That was available as a black and white scan for a long time, and it had some pretty neat pictures that were created in high-res mode of the Astrocade. And Tom, in the original article in Byte Magazine, they were all color. So nowadays, since many, I don't know if all, but many of the old Byte magazines have been scanned, I went and found, you know, those, I don't know if you remember, those magazines were huge, like they were like 500 pages. So I went and got the article and clipped it out of there and separated it. So it's actually pretty interesting to look through and just to check out the pictures and see what people were doing back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, this is from November 1980. Here's a cool name for an article. On the 13th of February, Adam added Pictures by Funny Numbers by Frank Dietrich.
And that's a name. That's a name.
And Zsa Molnar. ZSUZSA. Zuza. That's awesome. And that was from Creative Computing from June of 81. And it's just talking about that strange concept of using computers to generate pictures. Who would have thunk? Well, let's jump ahead to April 7th. Three software reviews were added by CJ Anderson for Box 15 Two-Part Inventions, which I'm assuming is a piece of music.
It's 15 pieces of music.
27 Christmas Carols and Guitar Course. And these came out in the newsletter Cursor that Adam has mentioned. So what were the Arcadians? And then that became the Arcadian.
Correct.
Cursor, and was that it?
Cursor became Basic Express for the last few issues. There's also Michigan Astro Bugs newsletter. There's Leaves of Zgrass, which was made by the manufacturer of Zgrass. I don't know how many issues of that there are, but I have just one that Tom DeFonti sent me back in the early 2000s. And it's not the first one, so I know there's several of them out there.
One of my favorite articles was added on April 12th. It's called Programming the Bally Arcade / Astrocade. And it is about programming the console. And this was written by some guy named Adam Trionfo, or Trionfo as he pronounces it. And it looks like this newsletter was published around the area that I come from. Is it from Buffalo or Niagara Falls? Do you know?
I'm not exactly sure where it's. Yeah, the Niagara Bug Group. Yeah. Bug stood for a Bally User Group.
The Niagara BUG Bulletin, 1, number 5. This is from October of 82. It's an article about a game called Blastroids that came on a cartridge. that Kevin O'Neill wrote. And speaking of Kevin O'Neill, he also wrote an article about Maze Man, which Adam talked about earlier. This was also in that Niagara Bug Bulletin.
It was actually this review that he did that got me to decide to have that as the High Score Club round. I'd played the game years and years ago because I owned the cartridge, but I never really gave it much thought because it has no sound, it's not graphically beautiful or anything like that. In the second episode of the Bally Astrocast, we're going to talk about Panzer Attack Red Baron, which was one of the first cartridges from 1978. It's kind of got combat in there, so we figured we'd start off with that.
And by that he means Panzer Attack and Red Baron. They're two different games on the same cartridge, right?
Yes.
And we're also going to finally start covering one of the myriad basic games, Castle of Horror. But don't worry, it won't be too scary.
I'm going to be going over a little bit of the Arcadian history in more detail. I've already covered the first two issues of the Arcadians, or of Arcadians. If you know exactly what that newsletter is called, let me know. What the heck? I'm going to cover the computer ear. I actually have this hardware device. I haven't used it because I'd have to type in the software, but it's going to give me a reason to type in the software for it. And it does voice recognition. I do know that it's not supposed to be great, but considering it costs $60, that can't be too bad.
When did that come out?
I think in 81. We're also going to have snippets or maybe the full interview that I did with Ward Shrake. Ward Shrake made the very first Bally multicart in 2001. And since then, several have been made. Ward really went out there and he made that one in an Arcadia 2001. And he has a lot to say on old computers and modeling. So if you find that interesting, tune in. So last week, after we recorded part of this episode, we listened to about a 23-minute phone conversation that Bob Fabris had with Jay Fenton. It was recorded on December 17th, either 1980 or maybe 81. Not exactly sure, but we know the day. And this was hanging out with all this tape software, and when Paul Thacker was archiving all of it, he came across several tapes, and like a dutiful man that he is, he went ahead and recorded them, and we popped them up on Bally Alley. They're not easy to listen to because the recording quality is not great. It's easy to hear Bob. It's not easy to hear Jay, although we can make it out. Chris said he was going to try to clean it up a bit, see if he can't make it sound okay. If we can't, we may just read off some of the things that Jay says, or we may play what they say and then repeat what he says. Thanks to Blue, they make the Yeti microphone that I am using for the podcast with Chris. It sounds great to me. Chris likes it a lot too. I want to thank Chris. He's my longtime friend and partner in Classic Gaming. I've known him since 1986, although we sort of missed each other for a few years in between 87 and 97. But since 97, we've pretty much been Classic Gaming buddies. Without him getting me hooked on listening to podcasts, this Astrocast would never have happened. He's a funny guy, too, and any humor associated with this episode is due to him, as you can tell just by my dry reading here. Plus, he edited the bits and pieces of this episode to make it a complete whole. I want to thank my son Dominic Lohar and his friend Brandon Reeves. He composed a jazzy theme song for the Astrocast. He played the flute, and his friend played the drums. Paul Thacker has been a tremendous asset to the Bally Alley discussion group over the past 10 years. He has digitally archived most of the hundreds of tapes himself. His devotion to saving the software of the system is commendable. We plan to have Paul as a co-host on this Astrocast. We'll see how that works out. I want to especially thank my wife, Valerie. She is an awesome woman, and she seems to love classic gaming and classic computers just as much as I do. I'm just kidding. She doesn't understand my fascination with these old systems, but she loves me anyway, and that's good. Ward Shrake is a great friend of mine, and he's archived many of the games for the Astrocade. I want to thank Willie from the ColecoVisions podcast. I had independently come up with the name Astrocast, and Chris pointed out that Willie was going to create a podcast with that name already. Willie has allowed me to use that name instead. Thanks, man. Thanks to Ferg from the 2600 Game by Game podcast. Ferg's podcast was introduced to me by Chris. I want to thank Antic, the podcast. Thanks to Brad Arnold, Kevin Savitz, and Randy Kindig. These guys have a really fun podcast, and it's their overwhelming amount of interviews that is really quite incredible. They delve into the lesser-known or even unknown people who are involved with the Atari systems over the years. Kevin has also done some deep dives into Atari summer camps, and he took a close look at the Dorset Educational Software System, which I find quite fascinating. He's got a nose for finding some neat topics that haven't and aren't getting the attention that they need, and he goes after them with gusto. Thanks to floppy days, Randy Kindig has the daunting task of trying to cover many, many computers. He's skipping the Bally Arcade, which is a shame, as it's a computer in my eyes. Damn that guy. Let's see, Mike White. Mike was an early supporter of the Bally Arcade, and when I wrote him a letter in about 2001 on the off chance that he might still live at the same address, I was delighted when he responded. If it wasn't for him, many, many cartridges wouldn't be archived. Thanks to Ken Lill, he's a frequent contributor to the Bally Alley discussion group. He has been responsible for modern Bally Arcade hardware, such as RAM upgrades. He also has made a multi-cart. Michael Garber, he wrote the only two modern homebrew games for the Bally Arcade, Crazy Climber and War. These are two of the best games for the Astrocade, so if you get a chance to try them, they are available as ROMs. I'm glad that he was willing to work with me so that we could have these released on cartridge. A really special thanks to Bob Fabris, someone I've never talked to. Bob created the Arcadian newsletter in 1978. It was because of this monthly newsletter that a community formed around the Bally Arcade. Without this newsletter, there wouldn't be nearly as much information available about this system. Also, it's quite possible that there never would have been any type-in software. Just as importantly, Bob kept fabulous records of his newsletter, keeping them all the way until the early 2000s, when it was sold as one huge lot. Paul Thacker and I later bought this archive, which has never been broken up, and it consists of what we call the Bob Fabris Collection, or the Fabris Collection. It's an indispensable source of historic material related to the Bally Arcade. I want to thank Fred Cornett. He created the alternate newsletter called Cursor, and later renamed the Basic Express. Cursor had a very different feel from the Arcadian. Although they both had similar objectives, that is, get the word out about the Astrocade, they each approached this quite differently. The articles and programs in Cursor tended to be more detailed. For instance, Fred allowed the program authors to give details about how their programs worked. And the Arcadian wasn't uncommon at all for programs to be listed without any instructions at all, and not even a brief game description or program description. Thank you to Brett Bilbray. Brett really dug into the hardware of the Bally and published his findings via the newsletters. Along with his associates at Spectre Systems, Brett wrote two cartridges for the Astrocade. The first was called ICBM Attack, which is a missile command clone. It uses a special analog joystick, the only game for the system that uses it. The second game is called Treasure Cove and is a colorful underwater adventure. These two cartridges were placed into the public domain in 2001. Which I think is fantastic. Thanks to Jay Fenton, now Jamie Fenton, Jay helped design the Bally Arcade, but just as importantly, he created Bally Basic, which allowed users to create their own software, and, even better, allowed the users to save their programs to tape. Now, how cool is that? He also went on to make the Hot Rod Basic, which was used as BlueRAM Basic. Lance Squire has been devoted to spreading the word about the Astrocade since he wrote the initial Astrocade FAQ in the mid-90s. There are so many others that I would like to thank. If you expected to hear me say your name and I didn't mention you, then...
And remember, keep first things first. Play more video games and don't let family members guilt you out of your passions. Well, they're always saying that on podcasts, keep first things first. You know, I'm like, yeah, yourself. Play more video games and do whatever else you are personally enthusiastic about.
George Moses created several music tapes. Among them were a tape full of music by Bach, a tape full of music by various authors, or composers, I should say, on a Christmas tape that had, I think, like over 20 songs, 27 songs to be exact. My favorite is actually a tape of Scott Joplin songs. There are 14 of them. On the tape, my favorite song is called Maple Leaf Rag, which was written in the late 1800s, I think. And we're going to have it so you can hear it at the end of the show.
Did he use the Music Maker?
The cartridge?
Cartridge,
no.
Yeah.
He didn't use that. In the early times of Bally Basic, the only way to create music was by really rudimentary getting notes from each letter that you could, or each key that you press on the pad, on the keypad, and it sounded like crap, and you couldn't really make music with it. But people wanted to try to break out of that and come up with something better, and several people did music experiments, and Brett Bilbray came up with a way that allowed people to write rather long songs, and it was published in the newsletter, and several people built on that, and by the time about 1980 or so, it had been perfected pretty good, and they were able to get, I think, about 2,500 different notes.
Oh, wow. Different octaves, obviously.
2,500 bytes of RAM that they could get available, which I don't understand how. It was quite a bit. The longest song was actually divided in two, so like there's like this 19-second pause while the second half loads.
Huh.
But an Astro Basic actually had music that you could that was easier to program. That wasn't until 1981, so that was 3 years later. So here's the song, and enjoy, and see you next time. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, Chris.